This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Tactics, where speech isn't violence, tolerance isn't love, and disagreement isn't hate. As always, we welcome you to the program. I am your host, Caleb Cockwitt, here for News Radio 1440, and we're going to go ahead and start off, as we do every day since the quarantine started, with our Alabama coronavirus update. So we'll go ahead and jump into the numbers. This is the latest from the Alabama Department of Public Health. You can see there that the confirmed cases are 5,572. Total tested remains actually exactly the same as yesterday, 48,387. This is, I wouldn't say super common, but unfortunately, over the past couple weeks, something that has become more and more common that we just either don't do any testing in a day or don't get results back in a day. I'm not exactly sure how that's tallied or why we have some days where it seems like we're doing zero testing, but we have another one of those days now. We didn't move any from yesterday to today. Now, our deaths from the novel Wuhan coronavirus right now are 178, and our hospitalizations statewide, 730. So a couple of really interesting things in this graph. This is an increase all the way around, and that's something that's certainly not good, that we're not at some kind of wild, unpredictable, crazy level to where it's unsustainable and we're running out of resources. That is not the case, and anyone that tells you that right now may happen in the future, but anybody that tells you that's what's happening right now, that's simply not true. You can look at the numbers. However, we are on an upward trajectory in just about all of those categories. And I don't just mean an upward trajectory in that we're moderately increasing each time. I mean, we're increasing more than we have increased in the past. It seems like our issues with this particular virus have actually ratcheted up, at least in recent days, the past 2 days to be more specific. So this is an increase all the way around, and that's certainly not something that is good. But let's go ahead and take a look at the overall coronavirus cases. You can look and see the data here. You can tell that there was an increase larger than the day before yesterday, and then another one that gets even larger today. Again, this graph shows us almost a perfect direct incline. We haven't seen a spike. We haven't seen a massive shift, but that's looking at it overall. The past few days have seen some increases. I'm not sure exactly what to attribute that to or why it's happening, but you can look and see that our cases actually in the state of Alabama have increased by a degree greater than they were increasing at a rate that is higher than they were increasing just a couple of days ago. And so that's certainly not something that is good for us. We're still up a little bit compared to those previous increases, and I'm not exactly sure why. Because based on everything that I'm looking at, there is no scientific explanation other than maybe people have decided that they don't want to social distance anymore, or the protocols that were being followed are not being followed. That's the only thing that I can think of, but I have no hard evidence to back it up. That's just speculation at this point. It's equally possible that people have not been doing that, and people have been continuing to adhere to the guidelines. Maybe some people are getting stir crazy and getting out a little more often than they were. And also keep in mind that if they're testing positive for this virus and we're seeing an increase in the positive cases, that means that this isn't something that has happened if people have changed. Whatever the X factor is that is causing our numbers to increase is not something that happened in the past 2 days. It's something that likely happened over the past 4 or 5 days. That tends to be the way this happened. So if people decided to engage in riskier behavior over the weekend, let's say starting about Thursday or Friday of last week, this would be about the time that we're seeing consistent multi-day increases in our number of testing. And so you can kind of see that in this next graph as well. This is, of course, new cases in Alabama per day now. You'll notice that the way that we were trending and the way that this graph is going is certainly not somewhere good, because you'll notice that we started to have a real dropping off point starting, about a weekish ago. and then we're starting to climb back up despite having been down for a little while. That's certainly not good news, and our increase of new cases today is even larger than it was yesterday, which puts today in the top 5 days that we've had the most new cases in the state of Alabama. So it seems as though the indications are that we are heading in the wrong direction and we have not peaked yet. That is the only logical conclusion that I can draw from the numbers right now. It's not the biggest we've ever seen. It's not the most we've ever seen. But if these are the numbers, then that does lead us to believe that the increases that we, or sorry, the leveling off that we saw earlier is simply not happening. Now, maybe that leveling starts off and it starts at the new higher level that we're at now. But either way, the leveling trend that we saw previously for the past week or so that we talked about, that simply has not happened. And so it looks as though the numbers are continuing to increase. All of those are bad things, but they are not things to get really worked up or lose any sleep over. This may be, because I want you to check out the most disturbing out of all of the trends that we're seeing right now. This is the death rate, and we're looking specifically at deaths in Alabama. As I mentioned earlier today, we have 178 deaths as of today. This chart really helps to put that into perspective, because a week ago today, we were at not quite half, but also not real far from half of where we are right now. So that's a substantial increase in a short amount of time, and you will notice that starting about the 16th, so from the 16th onward, we're seeing a pretty substantial increase that is relatively steady in all of that time, except for the 3 days over the weekend, which, again, we talked about this yesterday. Not sure why, but the death toll just seems to take a break on the weekend. It only seems to work Monday through Friday, like many of the rest of us. And so the death toll is, you're seeing a substantial increase after that weekend lull, and then you're seeing an even larger increase today. When you have back-to-back highest days of the death toll from this virus, that's not a good sign. Now, granted, the increase yesterday broke the record from, I believe it was about 13 in one day to 31 in one day. Now, that's a really big, that's not just breaking the record, that's obliterating it. Today's was not nearly as bad in the sense that it didn't destroy yesterday's record. Going from 31 new deaths to 34 new deaths is certainly not a good thing, but it's also not something that's mind-boggling. So that being said, the thing that is worrisome about the death increase and the fact that back-to-back we have set new records for the death for the new deaths taking place in the state of Alabama, one big thing that it does is it erases yesterday as an outlier. Because, and I said this yesterday, it's very possible that the high death rate yesterday, 31, not the death rate, the new deaths, sorry, make sure I'm getting this correct, and I don't want to mislead anybody. The new deaths from yesterday that were 31, that was something that was a little scary, but it could have been dismissed as an outlier, specifically since we had had zero new deaths, over the past couple days. If we had had 3 straight days where no new deaths were detected, and then all of a sudden we have one day where it shoots up to 31, it's not unreasonable to assume that that's not something to get too worked up about, because it's possible that those deaths just hadn't been reported yet or whatever. And so if you spread those 31 deaths over the course of 3 days, it doesn't look all that much out of the ordinary of what we had seen previously. The fact that we had 31 on one day and then 34 the very next day in new deaths, that suggests that that is not what happened, that there really were, or at least there were likely zero deaths in reality, not just because of lag on recording, that there really were zero deaths in reality due to this virus over the weekend. And then in 2 days, we went to 31 and then 34, meaning in the past couple days, we have had 65 deaths over the course of 2 days. And when you consider that our total death toll is only 178, you can see that a pretty big bulk of that 178 deaths that we've experienced since the start of this actually took place in the past 2 days. Now, hopefully that is not a trend that continues. Hopefully that is something that goes by the wayside, but that is what it seems to be climbing right now, and we need to do something to address that. Although, one thing that I will say is, if this trend continues and it stays roughly the same as its current trajectory, in other words, it winds up staying leveling somewhere around the low 30s, then if that takes place, then you don't have to be a mathematician to figure out that to reach about the 300, 400 death mark that people were projecting in the latest projections for the state of Alabama doesn't take us real long to get there. In fact, if that takes place in roughly a week, we would be right around there, a little less than a week. So that would put us more or less on course with saying that this week or next week is going to be when Alabama peaks and then it's going to start to die down. That's certainly possible, and the new numbers would coincide with the latest projections. But certainly it would be significantly better for us to go ahead and start working our way down now. Hopefully that is the case, and we don't have three back-to-back days of a new record being set on that. Now, some interesting news on this topic from the standpoint of different parts of the state and where this is going on. Montgomery County has actually surpassed Madison County and has nearly caught up with Shelby. So you may remember, and we reported on this a little bit, that Montgomery County initially, from the onset, was actually one of the places that, despite having the very first case in Alabama of the coronavirus, Montgomery seemed to just have low cases for whatever reason. And especially when you're looking across Montgomery compared to the other four major cities in Alabama, we were trailing pretty heavily. And that's really kind of starting to catch up with us, because Montgomery County now has 253 cases. And to put that into perspective, Madison County, the home of Huntsville, has only 204 cases, despite the fact that their city size is roughly comparable to ours. And so that means a larger percentage of Montgomery County's population has been diagnosed with and has a confirmed case of this virus. And Shelby County, which, of course, a lot of people that actually work in Birmingham do live in Shelby, and so it's a very densely populated county, despite the fact it doesn't have a major city in it. It's basically all the suburbs from around where Birmingham is. It's basically our version of Elmore. So Montgomery has Elmore, Jefferson County, Birmingham has Shelby County. And Shelby County, despite being one of the hardest hit places in the state early on, now only has 277 confirmed cases compared to our 253. So it would not be a stretch to suggest that within the next few days, maybe 4 or 5 days, as long as trends stay consistent, that Montgomery County would wind up surpassing Shelby County. And granted, Montgomery County, we're comparing raw numbers, not per capita, and Montgomery County does have significantly more people than Shelby County, so I'm not trying to compare apples to oranges. I'm laying all that out on the table so that you know that gives you some proper perspective to understand what these numbers mean. But it is significant that Montgomery County, who initially had been doing quite well on it, now not so much. We're doing about what you would expect, as opposed to doing significantly better than the rest of the county or rest of the state. And then another thing that's really interesting, when you're looking at the county-by-county measurements, Mobile has actually surpassed Jefferson County in raw numbers, which is really interesting because Mobile now has 755 confirmed cases, and Jefferson County has 723 confirmed cases. So looking at these two counties, it is really interesting that Mobile actually now has more. And Jefferson County, you may recall, has more people than Mobile County. So they have a smaller number despite their population and despite them being a hotspot in the very beginning of this. Now, what does all that mean? What it probably means is that Jefferson County was indeed a hotspot. And the reason that it was a hotspot actually might be part of the reason that it is no longer a big deal. because that probably means what happened in Jefferson County is pretty much everybody got it. And because pretty much everybody got it, you had a whole lot of people that were asymptomatic, and you already had a whole bunch of deaths, and you already had a whole bunch of confirmed cases very early on in this process. And since you had that very early, now a whole bunch of people in Birmingham are over it or immune to it or unfortunately have died from it. And now what's going to happen in Mobile County is that it and other major metropolitan areas in, well, metropolitan maybe a little bit overstating the city size, but you know what I'm saying, the major cities in Alabama are going to start to catch up because Jefferson County likely already hit its peak. The rest of us probably haven't. And so because of that, this is something that should not necessarily be alarming, but it's something to definitely be aware of, especially if you are residing in one of those other four major city areas like Montgomery, where we are right now. So if that is the case, and understanding that, that means that those are the areas that are likely to be hit more severely here in the next few days. But props to Madison County, despite having Huntsville, which is by far the fastest growing city in Alabama, they still have only 204 cases. So, you know, more power to them. I don't know exactly what it is they're doing. My only prediction in this, it could be Huntsville's industry, because the thing that you may need to be aware of is that because of the way Huntsville is structured, because so much of its workforce revolves around technology jobs, at least more so than Birmingham or Montgomery, it's probably easier for a lot of those people to just stay home. It's probably easier for a lot of those people to do some kind of work from home, and because of that, they aren't spreading it. Now, that's just speculation, that's just a theory, but it's the best thing that I've got right now to explain why Madison County seems to be faring so much better than the other counties that house one of Alabama's biggest cities. I think that's probably the most likely explanation, is that you've got a whole bunch of people that have the ability to work from home where that's not as much the case in Montgomery or Birmingham or Mobile. They have to come to a centralized working place to be able to work. And so the people that are essential are spreading the virus more readily because of that. Now, all of this should be understood to be in the context of Alabama actually having done a pretty good job with this virus, whether it's government policies or whether it's just the people of Alabama. If you're looking at it right now, Alabama has already received one of the nation's earliest clear to open up projections. They're saying that we should be good to get ready to start opening up. And they don't mean just open it up and everything's back the way it was. They're talking about a slow rolled open up, but they're saying that should start roughly the 4th of May, which I think is incredibly appropriate as a Star Wars fan. But anyway, the ability to get back, the latest projections are somewhere around May 4th. And if that's the case, we have one of the earliest projections on that in the entire country. So we're definitely not going in the best direction, but as the Washington models acknowledge, and as you can see by the numbers comparing to other states, Alabama is still doing significantly better than several of our neighboring states and several states if you're looking at the country as a whole. And so that's really good. Now, one thing that I wanted to address, and I don't think that this will take very long because, frankly, I don't think you have to think too long through this to arrive at a reasonable answer. I've had a lot of questions today from various different sources asking me about the protest yesterday because, of course, I was there and we were covering it. And the question that I've been asked the most that I don't feel like I've answered on air, I don't ever remember addressing this on air, is who ordered the street that people were gathering and protesting on? Who ordered that street shut? Because as you'll recall, and I'll just give a quick summary of what happened, yesterday, the Get Back to Work Alabama protest, it was actually just a rally, but that was scheduled to happen, and we had it all set up to where people could drive right past the podium, which was set up on the steps of the Capitol building, or directly in front of the steps of the Capitol building, to where a person could come up, they wouldn't have to interact with anybody, they would still be 6 feet apart from everybody, come up, speak into the microphone, they had 2 minutes to basically give their message to the governor, they can jump back in their car, and then they drive off and the next person comes, and that was the whole purpose of the car rally. And of course, what wound up happening that we reported yesterday is that, and it was amazing that it was only the block that would have affected the protest got closed for construction, despite the fact there was not a construction worker or a piece of construction equipment anywhere in sight. And also that road is brand new, and that's not something that should surprise anybody. It's the road that runs in front of the Capitol building, and so, as you can imagine, it's pretty well maintained. That may be the nicest road in the entire city of Montgomery. And so, despite all this, the police officers came and set up barricades and shut down that portion of the road for construction and wouldn't let anybody pass through it, which meant that it derailed everything, and it actually wound up making it significantly harder for people to social distance because they weren't able to just drive straight up there and say something. They would actually have to park and then walk a long distance to be able to get to it. And so they actually doing that made it much harder. So there's a couple of reasons that people have been asking me, who exactly was it that ordered the police officers to do that? So there's a couple different answers that it could be. It is incredibly unlikely. In fact, I don't think it's even possible that those police officers just decided they were going to do a barricade and it was just going to happen to be right there. So those orders had to come from somewhere. Since it was city police and not county police, we can pretty much rule out the sheriff's office. It seems very unlikely that the sheriff's office would have gotten involved in that, and if they had, they would have just sent their own people. Since it was MPD officers, it seems most likely that those orders came either from the chief of police or from Mayor Reed himself. Not sure exactly where that came from, but those are the two most likely culprits. Governor Ivey is also possibly the one to blame, but if Governor Ivey had ordered it, it's more likely that you would have seen state troopers there. You would have seen agents of ALEA. But since you didn't see ALEA officers there, then it's probably one of those two people. Now, maybe Kay Ivey phones in a favor with Mayor Reed and asks him to do that. I don't know. I guess it's possible. But it just seems very unlikely that Ivey would have made that request. And if she had, it would have made more sense for her to call in ALEA and make sure that they were the ones that were doing it. And so because of that, and because it was a city street, and because it was city police that were orchestrating this, I find it far more likely that it was either the chief of police or Mayor Reed. Now, I don't know if it was the chief of police, but Mayor Reed seems to me the far more likely culprit for a couple of reasons. First of all, the chief of police, his behind isn't on the line, as it were, when it comes to these things, and he's not the one that has put forward any kind of protocol in place when it comes to things like curfews or stay-at-home orders, and so because of that, I don't think that he really has a stake in shutting down that protest. And so he lacks motive. Maybe there's a motive that he does have that I haven't seen, that I see no reason that the chief of police would even want to shut down something like that. If anything, it's a pain in the butt for him and a bigger hassle for his employees. I don't see him ordering police officers to do that. Could be wrong. But the most likely candidate is Mayor Reed. And part of the reason that I say that is not only does he have motive, and he also has, you know, seemingly not just a vested interest, but he would have the power and authority to do that. And because of who came out and did that, it seems most likely he was the one doing the ordering. Now, he is responsible one way or the other. Even if the chief of police decided to just go ahead and do it and not ask permission from the mayor, first of all, that seems very unlikely that even if the chief of police had the idea that the mayor would have approved it. But even if that had happened, it seems to me that it would still be Mayor Reed's fault because the idea, because again, the buck stops there. He would have been the one that is ultimately in charge of the Montgomery Police Department. And so because of that, I lay the blame here solely at Mayor Reed's feet, at least until I can figure out, or at least until I see evidence that something else has taken place, that something else happened. I think that Stephen Reed is the one to blame for this. And we've also seen how in the past some of his previous decisions have been awful. I think the biggest example of that was the curfew. The curfew, which, by the way, actually makes it harder for people to social distance and be in compliance with the guidelines set forth by the White House and by the state. And Mayor Reed is very much a showboat. He does things that don't make any sense or are impractical, but that he believes will paint him in a good light. I mean, the guy, he's a politician, and I'm not necessarily saying that he's the devil because of that. Politicians tend to do things that paint them in a good light with the governors, or sorry, with the voters. And I think that's what Mayor Reed was trying to do here. He thought that this would be something that he just didn't want the visual of people gathering in mass and protesting up there right in front of the Capitol. But what he didn't realize and what he did not count on is that his actions, if this was indeed him, actually made it less safe and made it harder for people to social distance, just like his idiotic curfew. The mayor has implemented a number of really stupid strategies to try to do this, and I think it's more he wants people to think that he's doing something more than it would he's actually doing something productive. If you've ever read the novel Gilligan's Island, there's the group of people that he runs into that they have to always look busy. That's one of the rules. That they don't actually have to produce anything. They just have to appear to be busy. And that seems to be a common theme with Mayor Reed's decisions, is that he would rather look like he's doing something than actually do something productive. And in this case, I think you could also argue it was a constitutional violation of multiple of the freedoms granted by, or at least acknowledged by, the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights. So I could be wrong, but I think Mayor Reed's to blame for this one. Ultimately, the buck stops there, and it just seems he's the most likely culprit, especially considering he has a political motivation in being very much not, he doesn't want the visual of people doing this in his city, and it just seems to me like he has means, he has motive. If you're looking at this from a criminal standpoint, he is by far the one, and I don't, he is by far the one that the evidence seems to stack up most in his favor. So I can't definitively say he was the one that did it, but if you're looking at all of the probable suspects, pretty much every finger points to Mayor Reed on that one. So that's going to be our show today. I got to jump off here and get to my Bible lesson for tonight. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to be doing, but I know that we're going to be meeting soon. I encourage you to do the same on this Wednesday evening. If you have brothers and sisters at your church and congregation that you can get together with and do some kind of live stream, then great. If not, check out all of the different Bible classes we have going on at Dalreda. I know that Brother John Cackleman and Billy Camp have done a really good series here recently. I've been enjoying Jeremy Pate and his Burnout series. And of course, tonight we have our regular minister, Doug, who's going to be presenting something on the patriarchs. I don't remember exactly what his subject matter for this week is, but as always, I'm sure that it will be very insightful. So if you don't have anywhere to go tonight, if you're not able to attend a Bible study, you can do that. Or you could also do this alternatively. I've also got a series going on right now in 1 Samuel, if you'll go to my page on YouTube and look through some of my chaplain's reports. And, you know, we don't really delve into politics much there. It's usually, it's focused on a Bible study. We may bring something from the news of the day in, but it's always as it relates to the Bible story. We don't shoehorn in politics on that. So if you are interested in that and interested in looking at some of those Bible studies, that's another great resource that you can use, another place you can go for that too. So thank you for listening. That's going to be our show for the evening. In the meantime, stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.